Now, back to Whitley on Wine.
Slowly.
With your host, nationally syndicated wine columnist, Robert Whitley.
We're chatting with Janet Myers and Matt Ashby of Malfeeder Winery. Janet is the winemaker at Malfeeder and also at Franciscan, and Matt is the vineyard director, vineyard manager at Malfeeder and also at Franciscan. And after we went in the break off the air, Matt, I asked you about the differences between, you know, moving from one to the other, and you had a good line about you do have to shift gears, don't you?
Definitely, definitely. Mentally and physically, yes.
But I would imagine it's a big help at harvest time to have such vastly different areas where you're growing grapes so that everything doesn't get ripe at the same time.
Yeah, that's right. They ripen separately. We have different equipment for the mountain, mm-hmm. Different equipment down the valley floor. It's just completely different situation, different soils, different temperatures, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Now, when you decide to pick, is it you, Matt, or is it you, Janet?
Oh, it's Janet.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. So when you're picking a Cabernet grape, when you're looking at a Cabernet vineyard for Franciscan, and you taste the grape and you decide, okay, it's time to go, are you looking for something different than when you taste the grapes up on the mountain?
You're looking for the same thing, which is expresses differently in the different grapes. And what I mean by that is you're looking for the balance of the tannins and just a point of ripeness in the fruit. But that's going to taste different at Malfeeder mm-hmm. than it does at the Oakville Estate.
So does it ever baffle you? You know, in the sense that, you know, you're thinking one way, you have to shift gears too, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, these places really have, I mean, they really have a terroir, and they have a sense, and they have a theme, and there's a consistency to how they express. Every year is different, and that's half the fun. But you get to know which blocks are going to come in first on Malfeeder. The Malbec's going to come in first, and then the Merlot, and then the Cab, and then way later on the Cab Franc. And you get to know the patterns, and then it's just fine-tuning it for each year. But you're looking for the right balance of those characters in the grapes wherever the vineyard is. Yeah. But it'll just be a little bit different on the mountain.
You know, I have a question. I'm going to digress a little bit into something else. A couple of my colleagues at Wine Review Online, Michael Epstein and I guess Ed McCarthy, have reviewed some of your Malfeeder Cabernets. Mm-hmm. I think Epstein reviewed the 03 regular. I say regular.
The
Cabernet Sauvignon, mm-hmm. and Ed reviewed the Reserve 02. Mm-hmm. And they both gave them very nice reviews with 93, 92-point scores. What's the difference in your mind between a Reserve wine and both of these, you know, in terms of the evaluation of the tasters were very, very close. What's the difference between a Reserve wine and a regular bottling of Malfeeder Cab?
Well, in our case, our Reserve is actually a Bordeaux blend. So it's not necessarily varietally Cab. In fact, it's most often not varietally Cab. Typically, it's 55 to 60% Cab mm-hmm. with a good dollop of Merlot. And then depending on the year, we'll use Petit Verdot, Malbec, and Cab Franc.
Right.
So that's the Reserve. And that's really the best expression of the mountain character, but in a Bordeaux blend style. The Malfeeder Cabernet Sauvignon is a Cabernet Sauvignon. So,
but you do blend in other grapes, right?
We do,
you
but
do have
not
some Malbec, some Merlot.
Less so of the others. Those mm-hmm. are we have very little of those. So those really get saved for the Reserve.
Yeah.
And we do put some Merlot into the Cab, the Malfeeder Cab. It's typically 80-85% Cab. So the blend, they're trying to be different things. But certainly the Reserve is also getting the biggest of the Cabernet lots. And, you know, it gets released later. So mm-hmm. more time in bottle. We expect that the consumers are going to lay it down longer. It's built to age a little bit longer.
Okay, I'm going to ask you another question. And I know we're talking about your children, and it's tough sometimes to differentiate. One of my favorite wines of yours at Franciscan is the Magnificat,
okay,
which is a Bordeaux
yeah.
blend. And stylistically, how would you describe the difference between the Franciscan Bordeaux blend and the Malfeeder?
Oh, that's a really good question. And it really comes down to where the grapes are from. It's really a matter of the terroir and the place. Magnificat is built around our Oakville estate. So in Oakville, you're getting much, it's a much more supple, dark cherry fruit.
Boy, it really is a smooth wine.
Thank you. That's great to hear, because that's what we're trying to build. We're building a concentrated wine, but supple and smooth and dark cherry fruit, just kind of classic Napa Valley. That is Magnificat. The Mount Vita Reserve has got the bramble, the boldness, the rusticness, the mountain. So it's a different expression of the Bordeaux varietals.
You know, we use bramble as a descriptor a lot. How would you explain bramble if you're doing a public tasting and you mentioned that term to describe the wine? What would you say to somebody who said, well, what do you mean when you say bramble?
When I say bramble, I mean you're not just tasting a blackberry. You're tasting a blackberry while you're walking through a blackberry bush.
You're tasting the bush.
You're smelling the bush as you walk through, and then you put the blackberry in your mouth, and you get that whole sensation of place. So the bramble is just a wilder, there's a little bit of herbaceousness to it, but a sweet herbaceousness. It's just a little wilder expression.
Would you say that the mountain wines have a rusticity to them?
Yes.
That on the valley floor you have something that's more supple and elegant, but that rusticity will disappear over time, won't it? Won't the elegance emerge as the tannins
absolutely
soften up a little?
But we are not after making brutish, hugely tannic, you know, hurt your mouth kind of mountain wines.
Does anyone do that anymore?
Yeah, I don't think anybody wants to do that anymore because everybody wants to enjoy them upon release. Mm-hmm. So it's really balancing, it's a balancing act between making them to age but also making them approachable when young.
Yeah.
So now, because we're picking later, in my mind, a lot of that evolution is happening in the grape before you've even picked it.
Sure. So that's Matt's job.
That's where that hang time comes in.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. You know, I know it's a very delicate balancing act to leave the grapes out there long enough that you get the sweet tannins, you get some suppleness. You don't make those mouth-puckering tannic wines that I guess some people liked them years ago. You know, and the more tannic a wine was, the more people would brag about it. But that sort of disappeared, you know.
People don't want to wait 20 years.
It's not just that. You know, you ran into so many people who said, well, I don't like red wine. It's sour or it's tart or it's, and they were just talking about the tannin. You know, it didn't feel good, especially to drink a young wine 20 years ago. You know, there were a lot of them that were just, they were coarse. So to achieve this more supple character in the tannin, you have to leave the grapes out there longer, but you want to keep freshness in the wine. You don't want to get jam.
Exactly.
Okay, and I know your wines aren't like that, so I can – some people do make jam, but you guys don't. You make very nice, well-balanced, elegant wines. How do you know when it's time? I've got the tannins right where I want them, and I'm not going to get that jammy character. I'm not going to get something that's kind of raisiny. Is it difficult to tell?
No, it isn't. And really, what happens is you lose the green. All Cabernet tastes green. It all tastes like a jalapeno in August.
Mm-hmm.
It gets out of that very quickly, and then you start going into red fruit, and then it goes to black fruit. By the time you're a black fruit, your tannins still aren't there. So your flavors are already there before your tannins are. Then you're waiting for tannins. When the tannins, in my mind, when they in my palate, they move back. They go from being all front palate, they move back on the palate, they become more supple, mouth coating. Then it's time to pick before you get to that porty, raisiny.
I'll tell you a funny story. I was in the Languedoc region in southern France this past fall, and I was visiting some of the AOC appellations, you know, and small producers with 80, 90-year-old Carignan and Grenache vines. And we were talking about ripeness. And those wines are remarkably fresh, and they're not high in alcohol, but they are clearly ripe. There's no greenness whatsoever. And so I was asking a couple of the winemakers how they got such perfect balance in the wine and, you know, what they were looking for when they picked and whatnot. So, well, we know the grapes are ripe when the wild boars eat them. And I said, really? They said, yeah. They said, you know, we can test a row of vines today and it's not ripe and the wild boars aren't eating them at all. And then the next day we test them and it's right where we want it to be and the wild boars are eating the grapes.
We have that problem with our deer.
Yeah, it's exactly the same thing.
And they won't eat it if it's not ripe. And the minute it's ripe, they're out there, they have a feeding frenzy.
It's amazing. This happens every year. I'll be tasting, I'll be not ready. And then I'm like, oh, delicious. And then I look over and there's a deer over there munching away. It's like it's on the same day.
So it's kind of a little signal for you. Nature's way.
It's definitely a signal for us, yeah. I'm anxious to pick that then, too, because I don't want the deer to eat any more than
exactly.
They are.
Yeah. And what do you do about that, Matt? How do you control the ruggedness of the environment? And when I say ruggedness, it's not just the terrain. It's you have animals up there.
It's a wild forest, yeah. It's a really living place.
And you have birds that eat grapes?
We have birds. We have turkeys. We have, like you said, wild pig. A lot of deer, there's hawks, you name it, kit foxes. I see a lot of kit foxes when I'm driving up, usually in the morning, early morning. A mountain lion, every now and then you'll see a mountain lion, you hear about someone seeing a mountain lion, that sort of thing. It's a very wild place. So what we've done was we've really designed the vineyards they're sort of cut out of pieces of forest and they're planted in little sort of swatches on the mountain. Mm-hmm. The majority is still forest. So we have fences that go around the edges of these vineyards and the rest of it, of the forest. We've taken those old fences down and we've sort of, let that go back to nature. So we have these wildlife corridors. It was one of the first things I did on the winery property at Mount Vitor Winery. We were redeveloping the old vineyard there. We took down the old fence that sort of went along the edge of the property line, which is a kind of a rectangle. When you look on a parcel map, it makes sense, but not on a mountain. Mm-hmm. And we rebuilt the vineyard around the two separate vineyards. Right down the middle of that property is a creek channel. And, of course, the deer in the summertime, they're going to be going into that creek channel where they have the shade, the protection, and the water. And so we gave them that creek channel, called it a wildlife corridor, and we maintained the fences around the vineyards only. So I think it lowers the deer pressure and lets them have their space. We have our space.
Excellent. And we have to take another break. But Whitley on Wine will continue following these messages.
Peel me a grape.
And now, back to Whitley on Wine.
Slowly.
With your host, nationally syndicated wine columnist, Robert Whitley.
We're back with Janet Myers, winemaker at Malfeeder Winery, and Matt Ashby, vineyard director at Malfeeder Winery, and also Franciscan. We shouldn't forget Franciscan. It really is one of my favorite Napa Valley wineries.
Wow, thank you.
Yeah, you didn't know that. So, but, I've always liked the wines, and I tend to say nice things about them, in reviews and whatnot. The wines have always been good for a long, long, long time. You know, earlier, and I kind of digressed. We went off in another direction. Janet was talking about how steep it is up on the mountain and some of the challenges that you have met. And we really didn't go into that in any depth. What are some of the big challenges with farming vineyards on these steep hillsides? I mean, is it erosion? You mentioned it. This was sort of counterintuitive to me that it's actually warmer up there at night in the summertime than it is on the valley floor. That surprised me a little bit. But what are some of the big challenges that you face that make it more difficult?
Well, you hit on one of those already. Is in the wintertime is erosion. It's very steep. Things are going to be sliding and rumbling down the hill. The soils are very rocky up there, very thin. So just keeping the grapes happy and hydrated throughout the summer is important. So we spend a lot of time irrigating, watching the irrigation, irrigating to the right amounts so that the wines will be ripe at the right time. The vines are have enough leaf area, have enough canopy to ripen
amount
of fruit.
Can you get water everywhere you need to get it?
Yeah, we have a really good water system on our ranches. We can actually flow water down to our lower ranch from our upper ranch. We share water with our neighbor, the Hess Collection.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a pretty good system in place. We bought the third property 6 years ago. It was called the Rosenquist Ranch. And the first thing we did was redo the entire irrigation system. Just a new pump, new filters, new drip hoses, new pressure compensating emitters, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff, to make sure that when we do irrigate, the vines are all going to get the same amount of water at the right time and the right pressure. It's very important to keep the vines happy, keep them growing. They don't have a lot of soil nutrients to live on, and so it's important that they stay hydrated.
You know, I don't know if everyone knows this, but I know a lot of people do. You have much work to do in the vineyards in the kind of the off season when you don't have grapes on the vines. Is that more of a challenge in a mountain vineyard than it is down in the valley floor, all the pruning and all the different stuff that you have to do in the wintertime?
It takes us a lot longer to do anything on Mount Feeder than it does in down in the valley. It's a lot harder to do the pruning. It's just slower. Everything has to be done by hand. There's no mechanization. There's no machine picking. There's no anything. There's no machine, you know, leafing or hedging. Everything has to be done with a crew by hand. They're all the vineyard blocks are laid out in very small little sections, maybe quarter acre, half an acre, 1 acre. That sort of thing.
And what about things like that, the layout of the vineyard? You know, it was a big thing several years ago, the spacing, you know, on the valley floor, you know, closer spacing and whatnot. Do you have that luxury on a mountain vineyard or in a mountain vineyard, or do you just kind of put the vines in rows where they kind of fit with the terrain?
It has to fit with the terrain. You're right, exactly. We have to – a lot of our vineyards are terraced because they go down a slope, and you've got to have that terrace to get farther down the hill. So you're limited with your vine density per acre for sure, and that's our buzzword is vine density. You know, they'll compete with each other for water, for nutrients when they're in a high-density planting. Up on Mount Veeder, you're really limited to the slope.
And that raises another issue, and that is we hear about the green harvest and dropping fruit and that sort of thing. I'm wondering if because of the nature of mountain farming, if you even have to do a green harvest, you have such low yields anyway.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, we're talking about a Malbec at half a ton per acre.
Mm-hmm.
Please don't drop one berry, Matt. I mean, and, you know, cab is a ton and a half per acre. I mean, the mountain naturally.
So compared to like on the Oakville Estate, compared to, say, a Cabernet vine on the Oakville Estate versus up on the mountain, what is the difference in yield?
We'll get 5 tons an acre usually down in the valley floor. Mm-hmm. On average, up on Mount Veeder, we average, if we're lucky, 2 tons an acre.
And sometimes less?
And sometimes less, yeah.
What about in a prolific vintage? Now, this was before you were in the Napa Valley, but maybe you heard some anecdotal evidence. In 1997, it was a big crop. Everybody talked about how big the crop was. Did that also translate up to the mountain vineyards? Do you know?
I don't know about 97, but 05 is also compared to 97 in the huge amount of crop comparable to previous vintages. And we got 2 tons to the acre up at Mount Veeder. It was incredible.
Yeah, it was like a couple tenths of a ton an acre more, I think, on Mount Veeder. It'll increase, but less so. You're just talking about smaller amounts. But did have a little bump there, too.
So in 30 seconds or less, why do you have a big crop 1 year and a small crop the next year?
It's all dependent on the weather. Good old Mother Nature.
So what are some of the things that happen that knock down your yield?
It's really all dependent on the bloom time in the spring when the grape flowers are blooming. If we have good weather, the flowers will pollinate and form a berry. If we have bad weather, if there's even as much as one windy day, it could, at the right time or at the wrong time, it could really impact the bloom and how many berries we have in a cluster. That's the biggest effect right there.
Janet, I know you probably feel this question more than you would like to, but in terms of ageability, and everybody who likes really good, high-end, serious wines talks about cellaring them and how long they will age, is there a difference in the ageability of, say, the Franciscan Cabernets and Bordeaux blends that come from the valley floor versus Mount Veeder? Or have you had enough experience to even render an opinion on that?
I would say that because of the tannin structure, that the Mount Veeder wines do tend to age a little bit longer, or they're slower to evolve, show their age. So, there are differences. And I do think Mount Veeder, when I taste older vintages of Mount Veeder, it seems like they are showing more youth at, you know, more years than wines from the valley floor.
Do they age differently? I know that that with what I would consider a typical Napa Valley cab, at a certain point in time, let's say 12 years out after the vintage or whatnot, you start getting some cigar box, tobacco-y characters. Are those secondary aromas different from mountain fruit versus valley floor fruit?
I think that you have those flavors in the mountain fruit, but I think you just have some other flavors that came in with the fruit that stick around. That some of that really black fruit and the bay, I think it sticks around and kind of guides those evolved flavors. So it may have more appearance of youth.
Now, is it difficult for either one of you to wear these two hats, where you have such radically different approaches to basically the same task? You have to grow vines on the valley floor. You have to grow vines up in the mountains, and you have to do the same in terms of winemaking. Is it a challenge for you to have to go back and forth mentally?
It's a fun challenge.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a bad challenge. It is a challenge, two different sites, but it gives you perspective. So I think it actually helps to be farming and making wine from fruit from different areas, because it just gives you perspective. It'd be like an athlete doing another sport to kind of exercise different muscles and help their primary sport. I mean, they're different variations on a theme.
Now, we know, we've discussed this earlier in the program, Napa Valley has a number of mountain appellations. Is there any kind of an organized effort, or is there any kind of sort of unofficial grouping of winemakers who make mountain wines who get together every once in a while and show what they got?
You know, not that I know. I mean,
that sounds like it would be fun.
Yeah, it does sound like, yeah, there's like Mount Veeder, the Mount Veeder Appalachian Society.
Appalachian Council, yeah.
And there probably is for the others as well. But as a group, that'd be fun. We could go up 2,600 feet and crack open some bottles.
Yeah, I mean, I would think, you know, you find somebody who makes a cab on Howl Mountain, and somebody from Diamond Mountain, and you know, somebody from Spring Mountain, and sit down and, you know, roast a pig something. And compare, you know, taste and say, you know, you did pretty well in that vintage or whatever, you know.
Yeah, just like the Rutherford Dust Society, there's the Oakville Wine Growers, and then there's the Mount Veeder Appalachian Council also. They don't get together too often, but every now and then we get together, and it's quite fun for me, especially to meet the other personalities that are up on Mount Veeder, sort of the old timers that have been out there growing for a long time and have that history, have that connection, and they say, oh, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and that used to be such and so's property, and this, and you know, it's kind of fun to meet those personalities.
You know, we haven't talked any about oak, and we only have a few minutes left. Mm-hmm. Do you treat the wines differently in terms of your oak regimen or the type of oak that you use based on mountain versus valley floor?
Yes. You need, if you're going to have a really strong barrel, for example, that needs to be matched with a really powerful lot of wine. So Mount Veeder, the biggest, boldest Mount Veeder blocks can take a barrel that's going to have more inputs, mm-hmm. and then you would match maybe a more elegant, supple style or a block of Cabernet from Oakville with a different Cooper and a different selection. They both take French oak, and they both get a lot of new French oak, but you might dial in the Coopers and the flavors a little bit differently.
Do you use any American oak?
We use American oak on the Mount Veeder cab.
Mm-hmm.
And Franciscan cab.
Now, is that because it's bigger, bolder fruit, and it can take the what people would say are more aggressive things that you get out of American oak?
Well, American oak just...
It's really improved, though.
It's improved so much. I mean, I'm telling you, if you taste blind, there are American oaks that you would taste like French oak.
Mm-hmm.
And there's French oaks that you might think are American oak. So it's improved so much. But what American oak can give you is there's a lot of sweetness and vanilla and some very sweet characters that can enhance the fruit. And on a wine like Franciscan Napa Valley Cabernet, mm-hmm. or Mount Veeder Cab, which isn't going to be as big a wine, it just complements the fruit. And it makes it more approachable early. And so it's in keeping with the style of the wine.
Now, you mentioned inputs. What are you talking about?
Did I say inputs?
You said inputs. Some oak has...
About the barrel?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So this would be... that's the biggest input on the wine is what are you aging the wine in? That's really going to have a big influence on how it tastes. We do this all the time. We'll take one. We ferment every block of grapes from the vineyard separately. I have tiny 2-ton fermenters for Mount Veeder, and then I've got 10-ton fermenters for Oakville. It's different tanks, so there's no conflict or no overlap. Okay, then you press that out and you put it in different barrels, and you can really tell a difference between the Coopers. It makes a big difference. It's a stamp on top of what the block gives you. So that's what I mean by input.
Well, I think it would be interesting sometime to visit you at Franciscan or Mount Veeder, whichever one you were working at, and, you know, after harvest when you're putting the wines in the barrel and just see what I'm getting out of the barrel.
Come on up.
That could be a lot of fun.
Now bring your hiking boots.
Yeah, and, well, I expect a nice little, you know, heart-throbbing ride through the mountains, too.
You'll earn your picnic lunch at the top of the mountain.
Anyway, I want to thank both of you for being here with me today. It's a pleasure to have you here in the studio, and it was a fun conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all for this week. This is Robert Whitley for Whitley on Wine, saying until next week, ciao.
Talk to me nice. Talk to me.